You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 207 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Action Comics 1025. Aquaman number 63, Batgirl number 49, Dark Knight's Death Metal Speed Metal number 1, Justice League Dark number 26, Shazam number 15, and Superman, Man of Tomorrow, the animated movie. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news, Aldis Hodge has been cast as Hawkman in DC's Black Adam movie.
This is pretty cool news. We knew from fandom event that Hawkman was going to be in the movie, but it's cool seeing the casting. I'm interested in the actor that they cast as him. And I'm also really curious. I couldn't see from what I was reading definitively which version of Hawkman they're going to go with. Is he going to be the Carter Hall with a C? Who's the, like, human archaeologist? Are they going to go Carter Hall with a K, that's the alien Thanagarian? Be kind of interesting to see which one, or both, you know, technically, if you want to get into the, multiple lives thing with Hawkman. I'll be curious to see which one it is that they go with.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. And it's kind of exciting because with the casting, we're seeing that the Black Adam movie is moving forward and not staying in the limbo it's been in forever.
Yeah, it definitely seems like the movie's actually gearing up to get made pretty soon, which I know is what they've said. I know that's consistent with what they've said, but like you said, this movie was in theory, they had at least cast The Rock before Shazam was even a sparkle in the eye of some people.
So yeah, so it's exciting to see it moving forward.
Yeah.
Right, up next for DC News, Supergirl is to end after season 6. Supergirl will get a 20-episode final season, which the CW says will begin production later this month. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's nice knowing it's your final season, because I think it allows you, like we saw with Arrow, it allows you to build towards an ending, and it's not something that's sort of rushed in at the end.
Right.
We had kind of discussed, we wondered how much longer the show was going to go on. It always seemed to me the most likely to potentially be canceled of all of the, not that CW cancels their shows, but like it seemed the most likely to go. But yeah, I think it's nice. I mean, I think it'll give them, you know, the time that they need to tell the end of the story the way they want to tell it. I think it's had a pretty good run, especially considering the fact that it got dropped from CBS and then went on to have, you know, 5 more seasons on another network is pretty good.
Yeah. And how they included it with crossovers and stuff. Yeah, it's just cool how they integrated it in at the CW. And I was kind of curious when they were going to start production on it, because we knew Melissa Benoist was pregnant. And I was happy to see news come out this past week with congratulations to Melissa Benoist and Chris Wood, because they've welcomed their first child already, Huxley Robert Wood. So that was exciting to see.
Yeah, that's exciting for them. And I also wonder if maybe that played a part in the show ending. Like maybe it's, you know, I don't know. Did, you know, Chris and Melissa want to, not that he was on the show a ton anymore, but, you know, were they wanting time to spend with their kid? That's pretty understandable.
Yeah, That is.
I don't know. So I don't. I, like I said, I have no idea if that played a factor into the show ending or not. But if it did, I think that's fair.
Yeah, I think so too.
I would rather the show just, if, especially if she wants to, Melissa, most importantly, like if she wants to go, I think it's better for the show to end than to, you know, try and make the show keep going without Supergirl or recast Supergirl. Like, I don't want either of those things. So I, if that was part of the reason why the show is ending, I think that's a totally fair reason.
Yeah. And it's easy to convert some of the characters that are in Supergirl over to other shows like Superman, or even having Melissa, if she wants to, do guest appearances on some of the other shows. That would be cool too.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked necessarily if some of the other side characters end up moving over to Lois and Clark. You know, who knows what will happen, because Lois, or not Lois and Clark, but you know what I mean. That show will have had a full season to develop its own, you know, core cast. So we'll see if maybe that ship will have sailed at that point. But I would not be shocked necessarily if we got some other characters. We know one thing for sure that's been very consistent across all the CW shows is that they, for the most part, they're pretty accommodating to bringing people back if people want to come back. So, you know, with some of these shows finally ending, so Arrow's finally over, Supergirl's ending, you know, it wouldn't be a surprise necessarily if some of these actors still want, you know, a consistent paycheck if they find a spot for them on a different show.
Yeah, and there's one show that always has a revolving roster, and that's Legends Tomorrow. So we could see...
You're absolutely right.
If we could see any of these characters move over there, that wouldn't be surprising at all. All right, and for our last bit of news for this week, Batwoman Javicia Leslie dons the cowl in a new photo. That was pretty cool to see. I wish we'd have got a whole picture of the whole costume, though, because I'm very curious. I keep hearing that they're going to change the costume, so I wonder how big of a change it's going to be, or if it's just going to be tweaks here and there for her costume.
I would lean towards it being... I would have leaned it towards being tweaks in the first place, but having seen the picture that they put out with this, I mean, it looked good, don't get me wrong, but it also didn't look... It was literally just like a different actress in the same cowl from well, at least what I saw.
Yeah.
Which, again, it's fine. I'm not complaining in the slightest about that, but based on that, I would be surprised if the rest of the costume was dramatically different, you know?
I don't know. We'll have to see. I was just hearing that it was going to be different, so we'll see if it is or not. Could be just rumors, too.
Again, it was not a complaint in the slightest. I thought there was a chance that they might go with a different hair thing for Batwoman, given that it was a different person. So I guess I was a tiny bit surprised that it was still the same red wig. And again, that's not a complaint, or I didn't feel let down or anything. I thought there was a chance that that would be something that might change, and clearly that's not the case.
I guess not. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
It was Sean and the podcast about mankind. The Soulforge podcast was a dream given form. Its goal? To prevent fear by creating a place where humans and aliens could work out their differences peacefully. It's a pod for all, with topics including love, loss, sex, dating, and so much more. Humans and aliens wrapped in the ESO network, all alone in the night. It can be a dangerous place, but it's our last best hope for peace. The year is 2020. The name of the place, Soulforge Podcast.
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers.
For you.
For you.
All right, let's talk Action Comics 1025. So the issue opens up with Ms. Leon and Dr. Glory meeting in a cafe years ago. Dr. Glory seems to be making Ms. Leone disappear to another place, and Dr. Glory has decided to start over as well. Now, in the present, the Super Family has discovered the Invisible Mafia's base of operations. At the Daily Planet, Jimmy tries to buy the paper/building, but Ms. Leone shows up and states that Lois is from another dimension and has made up facts and printed them without authorization, and she can prove it. Now we see Dr. Glory and the Red Cloud go to Star Labs and release a parasite-like creature from another dimension where the parasite has killed Superman. The Super Family fights against it, but is able to take out Connor. And at this point, we don't know if Connor is dead or alive. And I gotta tell you, Cletus, I did not care for John Romita Jr.'s artwork on this issue. I didn't think it was that great.
Thank you for being the one to mention it first. I'm usually pretty critical of his art. I do like his art in other things, like his Kick-Ass series that he did with Mark Miller. I like, because that's his style, fits that kind of story to me. Like, I don't think his style fits Superman. And there were several scenes in here that I was a little confused on that I think I wouldn't have been with a different artist. Like, for example, towards the beginning of the comic, I think they're implying that Miss Leone is from Earth 3. Didn't you get that impression? I think that's supposed to be the crime syndicate.
Really? I didn't get that. Or maybe I just forgot, too.
Now, I could be wrong, but that's because the JR's art is too... It looks like it's the U for Ultraman. And it's definitely... The costume, they are definitely not on our Earth. That is clearly implied. And I thought the implication from what I thought he was trying to draw was that that was the crime syndicate. Again, I could be wrong because his art wasn't exactly the easiest to interpret. And then likewise, I know the comic wants it to be a cliffhanger, whether Connor is alive or not, but again, the way that he drew it made it even harder to interpret what was going on. Like, it honestly looked like he got his neck snapped in one of the panels. I don't know if that was intentional or not.
Yeah, it's very hard to tell. It looks like he's got his whole hand or something wrapped around his head. The artwork's just not clear.
Yeah, that was, again, in both instances, if it's not the crime syndicate, that's fine. That was a guess based on the fact that it was clearly establishing that Miss Leone was on a different Earth, and just how I interpreted the costumes, I think it's the crime syndicate. And then likewise, like we were talking about, it looks like Connor gets his neck snapped, but he might not. Again, that might just be the way JR drew it. I would assume he probably didn't. I'd be a little bit surprised if he's actually dead.
Yeah, I'd be surprised too. Yeah, it's hard to say. I could see where you could say that's Ultraman.
And then also, what looks like it's the Johnny Quick or whatever his...
It's very hard to tell because of how it's drawn. But yeah, I see what you mean by Johnny Quick. And you just can't see the emblem to see if that's Ultraman or not. It does not look like Superman's S, that's for sure. Doesn't even look triangular. I'm very curious about that now. We know that parasite's from a different Earth, so maybe it is from Earth 3. Hopefully they clear that up next issue.
I think they will. And the other thing that surprised me with this, Drew, also is it seems like Bendis is pulling all the way back to the end of the New 52, the start of Rebirth, where we had that this Superman is technically not the Superman from this Earth. And it seemed like, for the most part, DC is sort of just like, they told that story and then just kind of moved on from it. And we're like,
right,
yeah, he's just Superman. You know what I mean? But it seems like Bendis is going back to that. And that's kind of, I don't have a problem with it. I was just a little bit surprised. I was like, oh, okay, interesting. Yeah,
that is interesting. Yeah. I wish the artwork would have been a lot better. I think the story would have been... The story wasn't bad, but if the artwork would have been better, I think the story would have been better overall and more clear.
I agree. I, I just, again, I will fully admit that it's subjective, but for me, I just don't think that Romita Jr. is well suited to Superman. I think that his art style is suited to, like, kind of gritty, more realistic stories, because that's just, I don't know, that just, to me, his art style fits that, and it doesn't fit a story in which you have the entire Superman family, you know, attacking some sort of weird parasite thing.
Yeah, that parasite is weird. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Aquaman number 63. So the issue opens up to what was once the Atlantean royal wedding. Now it's just a huge battle with Ocean Master's troops attacking. Aquaman is wondering where the hell Jackson is. As we know, Jackson is at the Zabellian Royal Palace, which is under attack by the Trench. And Jackson and his grandfather join the fight and are able to turn the tide of the battle. We see Jackson uses his powers and sends the Trench beings running. Now, during the battle, Hawi was fighting one of the Trench people who seemed to be some sort of leader. And he stated, "You will return what was taken." And that's very curious what he meant by that. Also, later on, we see that the same Trench leader tells Jackson, "You will regret this." And it felt like it was hinting at a future story. So I was curious about that.
Well, then I was a little bit surprised by that, to be honest with you, because I agree completely. But we also know that Taconic's run is ending.
Yeah, I know.
So I don't know. Is she jumping onto another title that would involve this story? Is she setting up something that the next writer is wanting to do, and she's just sort of setting the table for it? I don't know. Because I agree, it's clearly trying to tease another story, but I can't imagine it's going to get resolved. We know her run is ending, so I don't know. Are we going to see this happen in Aquaman? Is this going to get told in, like, a Teen Titans book where he goes over there? I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know either. It'd be interesting, that's for sure. Now we see Jackson kisses Hawi goodbye and returns to his father. And Jackson destroys the device that Black Manta gave him and tells him to leave his mother alone. And then Jackson returns home to Amnesty Bay, gives his mother a big old hug, and shows her a picture of his trip to Zabel. And I'm hoping we learn more about Zabel and his mother's past. It also felt like it was setting that up.
Part of me wonders if maybe she wants to do, like, a miniseries with him. Because that's kind of what it felt like to me. Like, both of these things seem to be setting up specifically Aqualad storylines.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Very specifically Aqualad, which made me feel like maybe she's telling that story, you know, as a miniseries, as a part of a different book. Again, like, she's clearly setting up stuff for the future, which I wouldn't have thought anything of it if I didn't know that she wasn't going to be the writer on Aquaman much longer.
Yeah. So that was the weird thing about it. And you can tell this story, now that the Jackson stuff is wrapped up, I'm sure we're going to be seeing the Aquaman stuff wrap up shortly. I'm not sure how many more issues she has.
I would imagine it's one or two. We've got to be close to the end.
Which is disappointing, because her Aquaman run's been really good. But
yeah, no, I totally agree with you. We've talked about this the last one or two issues of this, is that I enjoyed this Aqualad story. I thought it was good. I do feel like it is really taking the momentum completely away from the end of the Aquaman story. I'm not sure. I could be wrong. I feel like if I was collecting this into a trade personally, like I was the editor in charge of doing that, I would put this story before, like, I would group the Aquaman stuff together, because I just don't think that it will read well. Yeah. I know that there would be a little bit of continuity stuff with it, but the huge gap in storytelling from the last real time that we read what was going on in Aquaman's part of the ocean, and what I assume we're getting back to next issue, that's a lot of not that story in between.
I'm thinking back, from what I remember, Aquaman really wasn't in it that much. He's been more of a side character in this story than
anything.
That's true.
I guess I should say maybe the Atlantis part of the story then would be more accurate.
Yes. But I have a
feeling... Because that's a fair point. You're right there. That's a fair point. It was more Ocean Master and Mira and the court of Atlantis and all of that. But that part of the story left off on a huge note. We were both really excited to see where that story was going. And then we took a 3-issue detour. And I'm like, what's going on with that, though? Like, I really want to know. Not that the story was bad. I liked it. But, like, I didn't want to read that right now.
Yeah. And it's basically been Aquaman waving at us saying, I'm still here. And then we don't get back. We don't see him again till the next issue. I'm still here. So I have a feeling the end of her run is going to be very Aquaman focused. So, but we'll just have to see how that wraps up. All right. Well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Batgirl number 49, The Many Deaths of Batgirl. The title caught my attention because the very first comic I ever bought was Batman 434, which was part two of The Many Deaths of Batman. And they put The Many Deaths of Batgirl on there, and that made me think of that story, and it was kind of reminiscent of it. Because we have someone who is killing redheads and dressing them up as Batgirl. And I didn't think it was hard to figure out that it was Barbara's brother, James. I think we actually stated that in the last podcast, too, when we talked about Batgirl, or at least the last podcast we talked about Batgirl. And I noticed they were still tagging this as the Joker War collateral damage on the cover.
Which is ridiculous.
I know. Because this has nothing to do with the Joker War at all.
You can argue because it was... The catalyst for the entire story was the Joker's story that technically was supposed to be part of the Joker War, but even that, you and I both agreed, had nothing to do with the Joker War other than that the Joker was involved.
Yes. There was a lot of family drama going on this issue. We had ex-Commissioner Gordon thinks that Batgirl threw James Jr. off the roof, just like she did to Jason Bard, and we even see he tries to arrest her, but Batgirl throws down some bat gas and gets away. And we see Batgirl is in a bad place emotionally. We see she's really ready to give up being Batgirl. And I know the next issue is the last of the series, but is this going to be the end of Barbara as Batgirl? Are we going to see her as Batgirl again in the future? Is DC going in another direction? Maybe Cassandra picking up the Batgirl mantle again? Or maybe somebody else totally? I was very curious to see what your thoughts were after reading this issue.
I believe that she will still be Batgirl. I think it's just a matter of DC is trimming their titles down. I honestly think if DC wasn't, understandably, in some regards, trimming titles down, I don't think Batgirl would be ending, to be honest with you. It's just because it's a Bat title, and those tend to be given, you know, a longer stay of execution than other books. If DC wasn't downsizing, I don't think this book would be ending. And I could be wrong about that. I'm sure, relatively speaking, among the Bat books, it probably was one of the lower sellers. That wouldn't surprise me, but still, I have not gotten the impression from this that she will not be Batgirl. I think DC is still invested in Barbara Gordon specifically being Batgirl, and I have to agree. I think she's the best Batgirl, and they've already. The other thing is they don't really have as much of a reason to go away from that. If you had said this maybe 5 years ago, there'd be a stronger argument because they hadn't really reinvented Cassandra Cain yet, the way that they have now.
Right.
And then you could have gone with Stephanie Brown, but had been Batgirl briefly. But I feel like she's pretty entrenched as Spoiler now.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? So both of the other two real options, like candidates that people could want to bring back, have, I feel like, for the most part, established themselves in new identities that work. Like, I like the orphan thing. I think works for Cassandra. And spoiler definitely works for Stephanie Brown. I think that's great. So I would be surprised if Barbara's done as Batgirl.
Okay. I was just curious what you thought. I don't think she's going to be done either, but I think they're using this as a way to close out the series.
Certainly. I liked this story quite a bit. I wish they would have maybe started the story earlier. I know that they can't make it longer because it's ending, right? But
right.
I wish they had maybe started the story sooner, because it just felt really rushed. Like, I feel like we could have gotten at least 2 issues of legit mystery. I thought they really could have played up like a red herring of who it was. Instead, the red herring was also the answer, right?
Yeah.
Like, there was never really another legitimate option put forth on who the murderer could be besides her brother.
Yeah, they tried to sort of hint it might have been the Joker, but they didn't do a good job of it.
They did that. It felt like they tried to lightly hint that it could be the Jason guy, but they didn't really commit to that either.
Yeah.
That's one of those things. I feel like if it could have gotten 1 or 2 more issues of this story, I think they could have really played with that, or with a different idea or something. Because it was almost disappointing when it was James. It was like, oh, I mean, yeah, there was never really any other candidate. I don't know. I liked the story quite a bit. I liked the mystery of it. I wish it would have been longer, you know?
I agree with you. I think they could have done a lot more mystery with it than they did. And we could have had Barbara investigating a little more than what had happened. I think it would have been more interesting.
And I think you could have played into the weird dual personality thing that was going on with him.
Yeah.
At the end, that came out of the blue right at the end.
Yeah, because
there was a tease of it earlier in this issue, and then we really saw it basically at the end was when they really fully came out with this dual identity thing. And it was like, I mean, that's fine. I'm not interested in that, but there was just no time for any of the story to really breathe.
Right. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Dark Knight's Death Metal Speed Metal #1. So the issue opens up with a recap of Wally West's life since he came back from Rebirth. And we see Wally, Barry are running from the Batman Who Laughs. Kid Flash shows up. The Batman Who Laughs unleashes a horde of Black Flashes on our team. Now, Wally uses the speed formula to freeze time, and Team Flash uses those few minutes to regroup. Then Wally decides to go after the Mobius chair. Now, when time resumes, Team Flash runs back into a horde of Black Flashes past the Batman Who Laughs, and we keep seeing the different flashes dropping until Wally makes it to the chair. And once he has the chair, Wally runs into the Speed Force and brings the whole Flash family with him, including Linda, the kids, Max Mercury, Impulse, and others. And then the issue ends with Wally, Barry, and Jay running into the Metalverse with the Mobius chair in tow. All right, Cletus, let me have it.
I mean, it was just, you know, it's the stuff that I've not liked about a lot of Williams and stuff. He had the needless Barry Wally fight in the middle of it. You know what I mean? Like, what was the point of that? It was so brief, and then their makeup, like, 2 pages later was so dumb. It was like, yeah, Josh, the fight was stupid. It's so stupid that your resolution to it has to therefore be stupid.
When we used to review the Flash at the beginning of Rebirth, we saw a lot with Barry and Wally arguing, and I didn't like it then. I don't really care for it in this either.
It was a very unwelcome diversion to the story. It didn't add anything to the story. It wasn't pleasant to read, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like an entertaining scene. It was just that, again, it was like, oh, I don't like this. Why are we wasting time with them arguing again? Especially, and then why are they arguing now of all times? And then they just make up, and then Barry and them are just like, yeah, you're my bud. And I was like, yeah, yes. What the hell is this whole thing been? yeah. So, that was really it. And then, like, the stuff at the end where he finally gets to the Mobius chair, and that scene's fine. And then they're like, oh, yeah, we were all fine the whole time. What? Come on. It's of any story that you can actually commit to having stakes, it's this story. I feel like you can kill Jay Garrick in this story. I'm not saying that you should necessarily, but like you can, because nothing in this story is going to ultimately matter. And it's like, I know everything matters, but you know what I mean? Like stuff's getting reset. They're not going to end Metal with Superman in continuity having a rock arm.
Very true.
It's true, you know what I mean? So like, yeah. I didn't understand. It was such an unnecessary cop out. I didn't understand that. I was like, why? It's okay. Like, I'm sad, but you can have him die in this story. Jay Garrick will be fine. I don't know. I didn't care for that because it felt like a. It felt extra cop, like it felt like an extra cop out because it was so unnecessary.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's move on to Justice League Dark number 26. So the issue opens up with Detective Chimp coming to take John Constantine from Madame Xanadu, who has him hanging upside down with a playing card covering his mouth. Madame Xanadu has taken a liking to Detective Chimp. We see she releases John, and John has come to Madame Xanadu to learn how to defeat the Upside Down Man. And Madame Xanadu explains that magic is getting people to believe in another reality despite what they know to be true. Magic comes from belief. Now, Madame Xanadu asks John to pick some cards from her stack, and the third card he picks, John refuses to see it, stating he knows it's the Fool card. But when John leaves, we see that Madame Xanadu flips it over and it's the Death card. Now, Detective Chimp, John Constantine, Man-Bat, and Dr. Fate team up and head to the other place. In the other place, we see Wonder Woman, Xantana, and Swamp Thing are there battling the Upside Down Man. And when the others show up, John starts taunting the Upside Down Man and explaining how Zatara had a plan to defeat him and that the Upside Down Man was weakening. And the Upside Down Man then shoots a beam of laser from his hand and hits John in the chest, leaving us with the question, is John Constantine dead?
I mean, probably, but is he going to stay dead? maybe not.
I doubt it.
I do believe he is probably actually dead at this moment in time, but I don't think it will last.
I don't think it'll last either. I like the stuff we had at the beginning with Madame Xanadu. Her interactions with Detective Chimp and John, I like that a lot. And the story's wrapping up. We're going to see the Upside Down Man defeated, but I'm curious exactly how that's going to happen. We're getting hints.
And it feels very satisfying too. Like I am enjoying the end of this story. I don't feel like I'm getting a. You know, like a sort of letdown story.
Yeah. And I like the fact that Zatara has had a hand in it the whole time. Like he had set this up all the way at the beginning. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. Even before the series began kind of feeling. So it's really cool how they're explaining that. And I do believe he's going to be coming back at some point, which would be cool. And apparently you have nothing else to say about it.
I really liked the issue a lot. I'm very much enjoying the end of the story.
All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week, Shazam number 15. So the issue starts off with Shazam in Japan fighting a giant robot. Now we see that Billy asked the people if this is a good robot or a bad robot because he just watched the Iron Giant and doesn't want to kill anybody's best friend. I found that freaking hilarious.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Now, once Billy figures out that this is a bad robot, he punches it a little too hard, taking its head off. And then he kind of stands there floating in the air, wondering what to do with this big old head. He tells the people, I was going to throw this in the ocean, but that would probably make Aquaman mad. So after taking care of the robot, Billy realizes he needs to hurry or he's going to be late to school. And when he gets to school, Billy is happy to learn from Freddy that they're getting a substitute teacher. But Billy's happiness is short-lived because the substitute teacher, Miss A's, has no intention of stopping the lesson plan, and it's Billy's turn to give his oral report on the shortcomings of the Reconstructionism after the Civil War. And I love Billy, how Billy responds to this, because he goes, I'm going to be honest, that's so boring. I can't even make up a lie right now. I mean, no offense, but why do we even need to know this stuff? Why don't we talk about any other cool things actually happen, like Shazam punching robots heads off in Japan? I found that funny too. Now, Ms. Ace thinks Billy has a good point and begins to talk about Lex Luthor and how he hasn't been locked up for good, or the Joker and how he keeps escaping from Arkham Asylum. And it's because we expect all those heroes to solve everything and don't take responsibilities to fix things ourselves. Felt like we were getting a lecture as a reader, don't you think? Now later on, we see Shazam finds that Ms. A's building's on fire, her apartment building, and he rescues the people in her building and her. Then the next thing we know, Ms. A's and Shazam's having deal at the local diner, almost like a date. But it's really awkward as the reader because we know this is teacher-student. And especially when Shazam drops Ms. A's off at her friend's, we get that almost kiss moment, which is interrupted by a guy stating that a robot is attacking Montreal. And of course, Shazam has to fly off and take care of that robot. And then the issue ends with Billy telling Ms. A's the next day at school that it's true the small stuff matters and that she's doing a great job.
I'm not going to lie. When I finished reading this comic, I was really bummed that the series got canceled.
I know, because this
I was like I already was, but I was like, oh, this is the kind of Shazam comic I wanted to read in the first place, Drew. This is what I was hoping Johns' run would be like.
I understand, because I was, when I read this, I was like, man, this is pretty good. And we know it's ending.
It just, what I liked about it was that it had what you want from, what I personally want from a Shazam story. You've got a lot of humor in it. You have that idea that he's still a kid in an adult body. And I know that's the more modern interpretation of that character, but I like that. That's what makes him different from other heroes, is that it's still a kid. And like, I thought that this story captured that really well, where, you know, he's saving the day like a hero would, but you've got him, you know, sort of like his teacher tells him this, and all of a sudden he's kind of questioning, like, am I doing the right thing? And not that, like, you don't see other heroes have that kind of existential crisis, but it's like in a childlike way, like, I want to be good, I want to do the right thing, like, how do I do that? I don't know, I really, and like, you know, he's like trying to help her, but it was different. Like, imagine, like, the way that he helps her kind of work through her apartment burning down ultimately is really good, right?
Right.
But it's not, like, he kind of, in a sense, stumbles through it. Like, he kind of stumbles into the right solution. Whereas, like, if Superman had done that, he would have known, like, the perfect thing to say right away or the perfect thing to do. You know, he wouldn't have started to fly away and then realized, like, oh, maybe I should come back.
Yeah.
Right? Like Billy did.
Exactly.
I love that. That's exactly the kind of stuff I want in a Shazam title, is this kid still kind of learning what it means to be a hero, what it means to be an adult, like all of those things. This was really like, not like a masterpiece comic or anything like that, but it's a really good Shazam comic, and I'm bummed that we're not getting more of it.
Yeah. And it was really awkward for him to be the adult Shazam having dinner with her and trying to be adult when he's actually a kid, and it being really awkward because it's almost like a date, but it's not.
Right. So, and I liked that we didn't cross that line, because I agree with you. It was there was definitely like an uncomfortable energy there, and I was like, oh, please don't kiss her.
Yes. I have to say that's I also found it funny that we had that short scene when he was working with Aquaman, and Aquaman realizing how immature he really is. Oh man. I can't remember the whole scene, but I'm sure he told him about the robot head not throwing it in the ocean.
Some people throw robot heads in there. Oh yeah, I can't believe that.
But this was great, and it is sad that I think we only got one more issue, but I could be wrong. We could have a few more, but I'm sad it's ending, especially to the change that seems to lead to be a better writer than we had. Not saying that Johns is a bad writer, but his Shazam run was not good.
Oh, which is shocking. I'm legitimately surprised, given that I liked I enjoyed his new 52 Shazam run, that his book was in theory a continuation of. So there was every indication that I would, that would be an enjoyable run, and it just wasn't. And it just wasn't the same tone. It wasn't telling the same kind of story. It just, this was good. I hope that these guys are gonna maybe. I know we haven't seen anything recently with that digital Shazam book, but I'm hoping these guys are involved in that, if that's a continuing thing somehow, because I don't know. They definitely got Shazam.
Yeah.
To me, like, they definitely felt like they understood what kind of book it should be.
I gotta tell you, I've already looked to see if there's another Shazam Lightning Strikes coming out. Nothing yet. So I'm leery on if that's going to continue or not.
That's a bummer.
I know. I'll keep my eyes out for it, because they may surprise us, but I'm not holding my breath. All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk Superman Man of Tomorrow.
Monster, why so glum, chum?
Oh, hi, Bane.
I have to write a promo for my podcast.
Well, you should do something like, I am a monster, and I could kill you, but instead, I will simply break you if you don't listen to my podcast.
I think that's a bit much.
I don't see how that's a problem.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show is part of the ESO Network. It's sci-fi.
From a certain point of view.
And we're back. Let's talk Superman Man of Tomorrow. So Superman Man of Tomorrow is an origin story for Superman that explores some of his earliest days protecting Metropolis before and after he takes the name Superman. Now me, I liked how the story opens up with a young Clark over at his friend's house watching a movie. And it's some sort of sci-fi movie about an alien. Says Clark sees how the alien is treated in this movie, and it affects him emotionally so much that his father has to come and pick him up. I thought that was a really emotional way to open the story.
Yeah, I thought it was it did a pretty clever job of sort of establishing what the theme of the movie was going to be, which was this, the humans fear of aliens and an alien living among them, and how he and others would deal with that. So yeah, no, I agree with you. I thought it was a great way to kind of open the movie and establish, in a sense what the movie was going to be about.
Right. Now in the present, Lobo comes to Earth to collect a bounty that has been placed on Kal-El's head. And during their confrontation, an alien parasite is accidentally released, infecting a Star Labs janitor and creating the film's true antagonist, Parasite. I also thought that Martian Manhunter was a great addition to this film, because the bonds between Clark and John was cemented by the fact that they were both the last of the race, had similar powers, and both wanted to protect their adopted world. And I also loved how Lois Lane took down Lex Luthor and sent him to jail. And later on, when Clark loses his powers, he turns to Lex's genius to help get him back. And we see Lex as an arrogant bastard that he uses Clark's being naive nature against him. And we see Lex's true hatred of aliens played out in this.
I thought that was one thing that was a little too reliant on you knowing who Lex Luthor was. I liked Lex in this. I certainly thought Zachary Quinto, I liked his voice for Lex better than Rainn Wilson. Not that I dislike Rainn Wilson and all of the other stuff that he does, but I was not a huge fan of his Lex Luthor. But I liked the Lex in this, but I did think his hatred of aliens, we really only got that one line right at the end, right? Like, it was like, if you know who Lex is, that it totally fits his character. It's not a surprise to you. But in theory, and I don't know who, a bit like in theory, if you're watching this and you're just going purely off what the movie is showing you, I don't know. I think you could have done a little bit more with it.
Well, to argue that point with you, we do see that Lex has built a like prison kind of thing against aliens. That, if you remember, towards the beginning of the movie, Clark X-ray vision, using his X-ray vision and seeing what kind of thing Lex had built, it showed that he was against aliens then.
Well, indirectly, I feel like that was really indirectly, like. Parasite, who will eventually be Parasite, says it's somebody who clearly actually does know that aliens exist. And so I feel like that point is still open to interpretation. Obviously we know the truth, right? We know Lex,
right?
But that is open interpretation, like you have that because you're Lex and you're smart enough to realize that there are actually aliens out there, that you're building something that can counter that in case you need it. I understand. I'm with you, Drew. We know who Lex is, so we know obviously that those things there exist for malicious intent.
Right.
But I think the way the movie presents it at that point, if for somehow you're watching this movie and you don't know who Lex is, I don't know that you would have picked up on his personal anti-alien bias.
That's true. But how many people don't know who Lex is? Honestly.
Yeah, and that actually leads into one point, and again, a minor criticism that I have, because overall I really enjoyed this movie. And the Superman burning his clothes off, I mean, it set up why he gets the suit, but also, like, if that scene's not in there, I'm pretty sure this is a movie I could show at my middle school for the most part. Like, I know Lobo gets his hand blown off, but that's not that bad.
No, it's not. Actually, I watched this with my 14-year-old, and we both died laughing when you had a naked Clark flying around.
Right. You know, and I don't dislike the scene, but nonetheless I was frustrated by it, because that scene alone is like, well, I mean, that kind of puts an age to a certain extent for some people, right? Like, as a teacher, I cannot get away with showing that, because that's like, some people will be fine with that and other people all get fired.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Guess I can, like, see that.
It depends on the person, but like, that was, it was frustrating to me because it was so close to being a relatively universally accessible film. And I think maybe it drops a couple swears in there. It was just, I don't know. It was one of those things, like, it was fine. I didn't personally care in the slightest. But it was like, oh, dude, come on. Like, this was so close to being a movie I could show.
Lobo was hilarious in this, too. He was definitely Lobo.
Yeah, I have to say, Lobo threw me off when he popped up at first, because the initial way that they were portraying pre-Superman Clark with the, like, aviator goggles and the pilot helmet felt like a very, like, kind of old school. And then you get Lobo, who is not, to put it lightly, right? Like, if you have Lobo, you can't, it can't be like a pseudo 50s story, even though I know the story was never trying to be, you know what I mean? But, like, yeah. It had that kind of aesthetic to it, where it was like a retro future. And then you top that off with Martian Manhunter and his modern, when he's like the humanoid-esque version of his superhero form. Both of those were so modern. They looked great. The Lobo was great, but it threw me off because initially you had that sort of kind of retro feel to it. And then I was like, no, that's not what this is.
One complaint I had, the movie never tells us who hired Lobo to come after Superman. So I was,
yeah, and it never even seemed to care, right?
Yeah, it didn't.
It was so odd.
And I was wondering that during the movie. I was like, okay, who hired Lobo, and why do they want Kal-El dead? I mean, that was one complaint I had with the movie. We never got the motive behind Lobo being there. And then
I think the other thing I would have liked is, I think the movie hints that it's when Clark saves the city from the rocket and throws it into the sun, that somehow alerts people that there's a Kryptonian on Earth. But how? I didn't feel like a big enough event that would catch the eye of people elsewhere in the galaxy.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's just weird. And then then at the end of it, we have Lobo was hired by Luther, and then all of a sudden Lobo's like hanging out with Martian Manhunter and Superman like they're buddy buddies. I don't know. It was just weird. I like Lobo in the movie, but it was weird.
One thing I wanted to ask you, Drew, I got the sense that this was maybe, we know from the last movie that we just reviewed, Apocalypse War, that movie universe is over, and that they said that it was setting the stage for new stories to tell. This did feel like it was setting the table, didn't it? It didn't feel necessarily like it was a one-off story.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got too. It felt like they were starting, this was going to launch something new. That's the feeling I got with it too. I was going to say, especially with the inclusion of Martian Manhunter and Lobo. I don't know if they're planning on doing some Lobo spinoff where he has his own movie or Martian Manhunter, but it did feel like the beginning of something new.
And they made sure to mention Batman.
Like, yes.
We know that this is, it's not a complete, it was not a completely self-contained Superman movie that happened to have Martian Manhunter in it. Like, it was clearly establishing that this existed fully in a DC world. The other thing that I really liked was the art style. I don't know if you noticed, but like the character models, the way it I loved the sort of, the outlines felt hand-drawn in that, like, the unevenness of them. Where, like, if you looked at, like, Lois's jawline, occasionally the line would be really thick, and then would get thin at a certain part, and then thick again. Again, like somebody, had inked it with a marker. It was nice. I thought it was very stylistic, and I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Another thing I liked about this movie was the fact that Ma Kent made his Superman costume and went back old school to when that used to be a fact. I thought that was pretty cool. And I also found it pretty funny that Clark was going to use his bed blanket as a cape. I found that hilarious. Me, myself, I really enjoyed this movie. It had a lot of funny moments in it, and it was a fun watch.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought this was an improvement with Lex. I just personally really enjoyed Quino's voiceover a lot more. He felt like Lex. Superman was good. It was really enjoyable. I liked what we got with Martian Manhunter. I will say one thing I wanted to mention real quick is the fake out death scene with him didn't really land with me, because I was like, if he's really dead, that was like too abrupt, right? It was brutal, but I was like, wow, like that's just it? They just killed him off like that? Like that doesn't, I didn't totally buy it because it just didn't feel like climactic enough, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
like the death in that felt like some of the deaths we saw in Apocalypse War, But those made sense because, like, it was a final movie and there were so many deaths that when somebody else gets suddenly killed out of the blue, you're like, oh, Matt, well, like, wow. But that also makes sense because we're seeing the stakes of this story. That was – there had been no stakes at that point in the movie. And then all of a sudden it looked like Martian Manhunter just got burned to death. And I was like, Jesus. That what?
Yeah.
So when he popped back up and it was like he saw what I wanted him to see, I was like, ah, that's lazy.
Yeah. Yeah, because I thought they – when I watched it and I thought they had killed him off, I'm like, man, did they kill him off already? I didn't know if they did it to motivate Superman or what. But when he came back, I was like, yeah, that's a cop-out.
It just felt like a cop-out, but also, again – it wasn't so. I wasn't shocked when he came back because again that scene was so sudden, and I know that they tried to show Clark reacting to it, but it's still it was just like, ah, man, that I feel like if you're killing that character, that's not like I feel like you do more with that scene. So it's just again like it. I don't know. That was the only part that didn't totally land with me with Martian Manhunter, but otherwise I was thrilled that he was in the movie. I really enjoyed him and the way they used the powers and all of that. This was a good movie, and I kind of am hopeful that this is the launching platform for connected stories. I like it because I liked the character designs. Again, I really like the art style, so I'd be interested if that kind of becomes the new style, of these movies. We'll see. But this was if indeed it is like chapter one, so to speak. I'm pretty excited to see where they go with more stories.
Me too. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, I just thought it since this movie is, in a sense, a Superman origin, there are so many Superman origins that you can read. Some of my favorites, the big one for me, a recent example of that, is American Alien that I've shouted out before. It's really cool because it's like it's a bunch of separate stories that are all Superman progress like Clark progressively getting closer to, and I think at one point actually is Superman, but it's all very like, you know, early life stuff, and it's really cool seeing in a modern setting Clark Kent kind of what we see in this story, which is Clark Kent, you know, he's not a kid necessarily, but he's not the Superman that we know yet either.
All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout about Stargate Atlantis. I just finished rewatching the series today, and I love that series. It's one of my favorite sci-fi series. The Stargate Atlantis and Stargate SG-1, I love both of those series. So I just kind of want to chat out about it. If you want to check out a sci-fi show and you've never checked those out before, start out with Stargate SG-1, and then... check out Stargate Atlantis after that. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can reach our feedback line, 317-564-9133. Leave us a message, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we've got Batman the Joker War Zone number 1, Batman 3 Jokers, Dark Knight, Death Metal, Multiverse End, Justice League Annual, number 2, Legions of Superhero, Wonder Woman, and of course, what I'm really excited about, Watchmen, Season 1, Episode 1. So, excited to check that out. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so.
How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.